Vedic culture, before hearing from a person like Prahlad or others who we hear from, it's appropriate, culturally proper, and it makes one's heart open to hear from a person, to hear the glories of that person. So not exhaustively, but we'll hear the glories of Prahlad, some. We'll also second his worshipable Lord, the glory of Lord Nrisimhadev. Then we'll begin verses 1 through 7, because his prayers don't begin until 8, so after breakfast we'll hear the beginning of his prayers. So in this 1 through 7, it's something that we heard yesterday, and as soon as the technology is working, we'll hear it again this morning. There's something that Prabhupada writes at the beginning of chapter 6, the introduction of chapter 6, that, as far as I'm concerned, it's a theme of what we're doing, because it's something that Prabhupada said Prahlad represents. Prahlad, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, was sent by the Supreme Lord from Vaikuntha to this realm to teach by example the mode of spiritual life, in Prabhupada's words, the mode of spiritual life. And of course he came to give teachings about spiritual life. So his teachings are not only in the form of instruction, as he does to his classmates and to his father, but the mode and the teachings are both exemplified within these prayers. Chapter 9. Okay, so now we're there's a buzz in that sound. If you could do something about that. So the title of chapter 9. Commissioned by Maharaj Prataparudra, who's paying his obeisances before the Vaishnavas. He's also a Vaishnava, has profound humility. And those of you that have been to Puri, you recognize the location, at least of this version of the painting. It's Narendra Sarovar. There's the water. And just surrounding Narendra Sarovar is this black and white tile. And so Gadadhar Pandit is pictured here reciting Srimad Bhagavatam for the audition and pleasure of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Advaitacharya, Srivas, Raghunath Das Goswami, Jagatananda Pandit, Surup Damodar, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And there's Haridas Thakur. So
So this is something that this painting commissioned by Maharaj Pachapuruta tells us something. It's something that was regularly done by Lord Chaitanya and his devotees. They would come together and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So to enshrine that event and that experience, he had an artist make this nice painting. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we mentioned yesterday that every day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after visiting, taking darshan of Jagannath in the morning, would receive prasad, take the prasad to Haridas, spend time with Haridas. And then next was he'd go to Tota Gopinath temple, see Gopinath chant and dance, and then hear for hours, every day, Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit, because that was one of his excellences. He was excellent in reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. So Mahaprabhu would sit and hear from his devotee speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. And we heard yesterday that he would hear Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj narration and from beginning to end, and then say it again. Here's a different version than the one you saw yesterday, but similar to the one this morning. And somebody very kindly put the names of everybody in Bengali, so if you read Bengali, you can see who's who. So as these devotees heard from Gadadhar Pandit, we should also regularly hear from Srila Prabhupada in his Bhaktivedanta purports, which we will be doing for the time spent together. The benefit, of course, is refining our hearts, understanding about the mode of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. That was Prahlad's mission, and we'll hear about it. So it'll sharpen our understanding of what is the proper mood or mode to carry out our service, how to remain fearless. There's multiple mentions of fear and fearlessness. Prahlad was an example of fearlessness. Deep conviction, deep faith, constant remembrance, and so like this, ways of Prahlad and the very special position of the personality of Godhead, his worshipable Lord. So here's that message again from Canto 7, Chapter 6. I'll just read it. It's kind of thematic to hear it again. By accepting the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, who is in the Parampara succession, one will be able to understand the mode of spiritual life. In accepting this mode of activity, there is no need for material qualifications. Now, in the material world, material qualifications are everything. And so sometimes devotees may feel, I don't have material qualifications. And what are our material qualifications anyways? But they're not needed. Although no material qualifications, Prabhupada is saying, is the makeup of Prahlad, he has so many qualifications. But that means his qualifications are spiritual qualifications. Here are some of his glories. He's amongst one of the 12 Mahajans. We know this from Yamaraj, who was one of them. He lists the 12. Prahlada, Janaka, Bhishma. Prahlada's right at the top of the list. He's a great authority. And when Haridas Thakur expresses himself to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's details of the pastime which time doesn't permit. He says, it's no surprise to me, Haridas, that your greatness, because you are non-different than Prahlad Maharaj. Now, we commonly hear in ISKCON that Haridas Thakur was Lord Brahma. So he's a combination. Let's say the mood of both. Brahma, in terms of his, after stealing the calves and cowherd boys, those prayers, that Lord Brahma. And Haridas Thakur was also Prahlad. It's confirmed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally. And in the, just as Haridas Thakur was the name constantly as he did, there's qualifications, and those qualifications are found in Lord Chaitanya's teachings in Shikshastaka. And Prahlad embodies those four: humility, tolerance, offering respect to others, having no expectation from of respect from others in return. I'm mentioning lots of time embellishing, but highly elevated. The emblem of this verse, Shikshastaka 3, which Lord Chaitanya said, it's so important, you should string it on the thread of the holy name and wear it around your neck for constant remembrance, and Prahlad Maharaj is the personification of that. Mentioned yesterday, embodiment of this quality, para dukkha dukkhi. Anyone that's heard Srila Prabhupada's recorded lectures is very familiar with this phrase, para dukkha dukkhi. There's many Vaishnavas who he would, Prabhupada, refer to as para dukkha dukkhi, one of them being Vasudev Datta. Vasudev Datta requested Lord Chaitanya to deliver all the living entities in the universe. I know you can do it. And if you think they're too sinful, then transfer all those sinful reactions to me lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. I will suffer their sinful reactions, but please deliver them. That's Vasudev Datta, para dukkha dukkhi. The phrase is often applied to Prahlad or Haridas. It comes from a text written by Raghunath Das Goswami. Prabhupada refers to it. You can look it up later if you wish. Whoops. Chaitanya Charitamrita. What happened? Here. In Vilapa Kusha Manjali. In that writing of Raghunath, he's glorifying Sanatan Goswami. Raghunath Das had enormous affection and faith and submission to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. They're also exalted, but he felt that in this prayer, specifically, he said, I had abundant material attraction. Of course, that's the opposite of Raghunath Das's quality. But I was saved from drinking poison by Sanatana Goswami, who is very compassionate upon the distressed. Para dukkha dukkhi. The distress of an exalted soul, as we hear in the prayers of Prahlad, or statements of Prahlad, that I have no distress except one thing. I have no distress because I just think of you and everything's nice. But I do have one distress, and that's the suffering of the other living entities. That brings me distress. So please relieve my distress, because I won't, you want to take me with you to the spiritual world, but I don't want to go without all these people. So bring all these people. Similar. The language is different, but similar to Vasudev Datta. Haridas had similar mood. This exalted souls have this mood. They feel great compassion and concern, transcendental compassion and concern for the suffering of others. So therefore, we don't hear extensively about how Prahlad later on gave transcendental knowledge to others, but that was one of the, yesterday evening we heard, it's one of the instructions that Lord Nrsingadev gave him. Become king and teach others about the ways of devotional service. And so he did both. Paradukutuki. So when we're hearing the prayers of Prahlad, we should bear in mind how exalted he is in so many ways. And then there's the worshipable Lord of Prahlad, who appeared because of Prahlad. And in our Gaudiya line, our understanding is that it's Lord Nrsingadev who grants the power to destroy all obstacles on the path of devotional service. Do you feel that you sometimes have obstacles? Looking around the room and thinking of different obstacles that I know that you're facing. Lord Nrsingadev grants the power to destroy those obstacles. Whoever may have that power to destroy obstacles, Lord Nrsingadev grants that power. Here's the scriptural reference that our Gaudiya Vaishnavas have for that understanding. It's from this Brahma Samhita verse. Let's say it together. Yat pada pallava yogam vidhaya kumbha dvande pranama samaye saganadi rajaha vighan vihantam anam asya jagat trayasya govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. I put in bold type here the kumbha. Dvandve. What's a kumbha? Kumbha is a pot. And dvandve is two pots. So the translation reads, Bhaktisiddhanta's translation, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, whose lotus feet are always held by Ganesha upon the kumbha dvandve, the pair of tumuli protruding from his elephant head, in order to obtain power for his function of destroying all obstacles on the path of progress of the three worlds. Now, this verse says it's Govinda's lotus feet are held by the pair of tumuli or the kumbha dvandve protruding from his elephant head. And that lotus feet of Govinda that are on these tumuli, that gives him the power to remove obstacles. Now, this word tumuli, this is Bhaktisiddhanta's language. You have to look it up in a dictionary. So tumuli means to bulge or swell. And it has different applications, tumuli, without going into it. On the head of an elephant, there are these two tumuli. And it's on that tumuli of Ganesha that the lotus feet of Govinda are touching. But it's our understanding of our Gaudiya Acharyas, that form of Govinda that places his feet on the head of Ganesha is Lord Nrsingadeva. And therefore, as persons who are not Vaishnavas and they're doing their rituals, they worship Ganesha. It's an essential part of any sacrifice. There's prayers to Ganesh to remove the obstacles in achieving what's desired by that yajna or sacrifice. He's essential in every single yajna. He gets his power to remove obstacles from Govinda. And the manifestation of Govinda is Lord Nrsingadeva. And therefore, for us, every time we have aarti, we sing the Nrsinga prayers. If there's some obstacle that has arisen because we've imperfectly rendered our service in the aarti or whatever it is that we've done, we sing the Nrsinga prayers. Because we're worshipping Lord Nrsingadeva, who removes obstacles. Yes? He's very special for us, the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, here's a little additional refinement of detail. One of our now available BBT translation books is a book by Rupa Goswami, Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Laghu Bhagavatamrita essentially is taking the sixth question of the sages and the answers given by Sutta Goswami in chapter 3 of the Bhagavatam, forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, and he just writes a whole book about it. It's a description of the avatars of the Supreme Lord Govinda as they appear in this world. So in the section that deals with categories of avatars, this is what you're going to see is now directly from Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Lord Nrsingadeva falls in this category, Para Vasta or Shad Aishvarya Purna Avatar. Shad Aishvarya, the six opulences, Purna, in full. So, here's Rupa Goswami's writing. It starts, those who are empowered, they receive some of the power of the Supreme Lord. They're in the Avesha category. The Kumaras, Narada, Prithu. Then another, more opulences or more power, Mohini, Danvantari, Hamsa, Vyasa, Datta, and Shuka are some of the Prabhava. And then the Vaibhava incarnations display a more superior potency than the Prabhavas. Examples, Machikurma, Naranarayana, Varaha, Ayashirsha, Prishnigarbha, Valabhadra, and Yajna. So now we've had so far Avesha, Prabhava, Vaibhava. Then Rupa Goswami writes, even more powerful are the Paravashta, Paravashta avatars. And there's three. Nrsingha, Rama, and Krishna, who exhibit more power than the others. And then, of course, Krishna is the source of all, and so he No one supersedes him. But Rama and Nrisimha are in a very, very special category. According to Rupa Goswami. And now we're going to hear something more about the special position of these two, Lord Nrisimha and Rama. We've heard this Shad Aishvarya Purna term. So next he explains, these six opulences are manifest fully in these three. Thus they're considered Paravasta. From Padma Purana, the relation between the other two, Nrisimha and Rama, and Krishna is like lamps lit from the lamp of full six powers. Krishna. So Krishna expands, and when he expands, it's like one lamp, and from one lamp other lamps are lit, and they each have equal power. And that's a verse in the Brahma Samhita. We know that verse. So, according to Avesha forms not as full as the Prabhava forms, not as full as the Vaibhava forms, not as full as the same, this category, Paravasta. So they're very special, these two, Lord Nrisimhadeva and Lord Ramachandra. Very special. Some further glories of Lord Nrisimhadeva. I thought you'd appreciate. This is mainly from Lagu Bhagavatamrita. He writes, Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared when? Before the churning of the milk ocean, in the reign of the sixth Chakshusha Manu, he appeared before the appearance of Lord Kurma. He displays abundant power. He gives joy to Prahlad. He destroys ignorance of the devotees, Lord Nrisimhadeva. He has effulgence like the autumn moon. And he possesses the head of a lion. These are verses glorifying him, just taken from them. In whose mouth resides, we're going to hear at the end of chapter 9, some of his words that are really nice. In whose chest resides the goddess of fortune. In whose heart resides knowledge. Now, these are taken from Bhavartha Dipika. What's Bhavartha Dipika? Bhavartha Dipika is a commentary by Sridhar Swami, who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted as the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam commentaries. So his commentary is called Bhavartha Dipika. And reference to that is made in Sanatana Goswami's, Rupa Goswami's Lagu Bhagavatamrita. And there's some more, again from Bhavartha Dipika. When he appeared, he was roaring so loudly, his hair shook the clouds. His glaring eyes stole the effulgence of the luminaries in the sky. His breathing agitated the seas and the ocean. Airplanes, not 747s, were thrown into outer space and the upper planetary system. The earth appeared to slip from its position by the pressure of his lotus feet. Hills and mountains sprang up by his intolerable force. This is all descriptions of Sanatana Goswami. Sridhar Swami in his Bhavartha Dipika. And then it ends, this little section, although he showed this fierce form, at the same time, he is as cool as the moon for the devotees. So this is important because it's at the beginning of the very first verse in chapter 9. The roaring and the whole scene of Ugra Nrisingha as he's ripping apart Hiranyakashipu. Very fierce. But Prahlad was totally unafraid because he understood that fierce thing is for Hiranyakashipu type people. But for the devotees, cooling and soothing appearance. So this gives us something of an idea of the persons, Lord Nrisingadeva and Prahlad, that we're going to be hearing from. Their very special position amongst the forms of the Lord and amongst the devotees of the Lord. Very special. So their messages are also very special. We heard yesterday. Lord Nrisingadeva gave the instruction to Prahlad to teach by example and by his words the life of pure devotion. So that's what's coming our way. Now, the first verse, so we'll cover 7 verses this morning. The first verse of the prayers, he doesn't start praying yet. This is Narada speaking to Yudhisthira. The whole story of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad, it's all being narrated by Narada to Maharaj Yudhisthira. So Narada is saying, the demigods, we saw that picture of the roaring of Lord Nrisingadeva even after Hiranyakashipu was killed. Brahma has asked him at the end of chapter 8, after the prayers didn't pacify the Lord. The demigods headed by Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the other great demigods dared not come forward before the Lord, who at that time was Manyu Sarambha, extremely angry. Now, God is supposed to be spiritual. And what does anger have to do in a spiritual person? What to speak of? God becomes angry. He's not angry at Prahlad. He's not angry at the demigods. He's angry at Hiranyakashipu because he was torturing and tormenting and attempting to kill his devotee. Supposed to be peaceful and not angry. He was angry. Extremely angry. Really angry. And that's a feature. We're covering something that we discussed yesterday again. The Lord has this capacity for anger. Wherever we find here, it has its source in the Supreme. And his anger is in the Sadaishvarya. It's at the top of the list of anger. And it was directed towards one person. Hiranyakashipu. Now, yesterday, we heard when Jai and Vijay were cursed by the Kumaras said that you don't belong in this place that's ruled by Madhu Dvisha, because within Madhu Dvisha there's no influence of passion and ignorance. But you're infested with passion and ignorance, so you don't belong here. You should leave here. We curse you. Get out. So this cost us. Now we're doing it again. Prabhupada explains specifically of the name Madhu Dvisha. Madhu is a demon, and Lord Vishnu felt Dvisha. And Prabhupada specifically says he felt envy. Not the kind that we feel, but the pure kind. He was inimical or envious. Now, why was he envious? Why was he having those feelings? There was a reason. It wasn't just, hey, I'd like to have some feelings. So, Madhu and Kaitava had stolen the Vedas and they were planning to use it in demoniac ways. And no way. I killed them. Madhu Dvisha. And there was a mood with which he killed them. So the Supreme Lord has such feelings, like anger, like he showed even to his devotee, pictured here, Grandfather Bhishma. Why? Because Grandfather Bhishma, it's a long story, Grandfather Bhishma wanted to show that Krishna holds giving protection to his devotee above keeping his word, and he always keeps his word. But even above keeping his word, I mean, the Leela of Lord Ramachandra was upholding the word of his father. And once he gave the word that I will uphold the word of my father, I can't break my word. Krishna gave his word, he won't fight. But Krishna holds above that the protection of his devotee. And when Grandfather Bhishma wanted to break Krishna's vow, because Krishna tricked him so that his vow, which would never be broken, was broken, by taking the five arrows, with these five arrows, tomorrow I'll kill the five Pandavas. Krishna tricked, got the five arrows. As he's made me break my promise, I'll make him break his. And show his glory that he holds, protecting his devotees above everything. That's Krishna. So he knew. So he took this vow and he was fighting ferociously to kill Arjuna. And Krishna picked up the broken chariot wheel of Arjuna and was breaking his vow to protect his devotee Arjuna. And he was exhibiting anger, transcendental anger, towards his own devotee, Grandfather Bhishma, to protect his devotee Arjuna. Now, it's Leela. It's Leela, so don't get worried. He wasn't going to smash Grandfather Bhishma. It's a Leela. It's a long narration, another time. But it's not only in this circumstance that he exhibits anger. When Maharaj Ambarish was in difficulty, he exhibited his anger by sending Sudarshan Chakra after Durvasa Muni and chased him all over the universe. And that anger of Lord Vishnu couldn't be subsided until Durvasa Muni went back and literally secured the forgiveness of the devotee, Ambarish. So here's Prabhupada speaking on this subject. Is it possible? The answer is yes. Is it possible for a devotee to have anger? And it's transcendental like Krishna's anger. It's possible. No. Unless we're pure, it's not possible. But it's possible. So here's Prabhupada's teaching in this regard. From Canto 7, Chapter 9, Verse 1. The Lord's anger, and the devotee may also have anger. So here's Prabhupada's explanation. These bad habits, kam, krodh. Kam means lust. Krodha means anger. So, if they are also coming from God, then how can we neglect it? How can we reject it? So there is no need of rejecting. That is the Narottam Das Thakur's. You cannot reject. That is not possible. As you are a living being, there must be kama, krodha, lobha, moha, matsarya. You cannot reject it. You cannot make it zero. That is impersonalism. But it has its proper use. That you have to know. Unless you know the proper use of everything, everything proper use means, it must be used for Krishna, then it is proper use. Otherwise, it is misused. His lecture on the verse that we're discussing. See, he makes reference, as you see, to Narottam Das Thakur, and Narottam Das Thakur was explaining in his writings that anger, each of these six, but anger has its proper position when there is bhakta dveshi jane. Dveshi, same word. When there's bhakta dveshi, when there's enmity towards a devotee, bhakta dveshi jane, that's appropriate. Then there should be anger. And a nice example of this, many, is Hanuman. He showed anger because Sita has been kidnapped and taken from Lord Ramachandra, his dear master. And so, after finding Sita, decided to burn Lanka. Sita will soon come and destroy you. And so, it was a warning. And here is Hanuman after it's over. His tail was on fire, so you see the painting, tip of his tail is in the ocean, cooling it off. Watching the city of Lanka burn. And two other examples. When he took a vow that he would destroy Jayadrath before the sun set the next day, or he'd enter into fire and kill himself. Now the situation was, long story, but a short version of the long story is, Jayadrath had a benediction from Lord Shiva, could stop him. No one could destroy him except for one, Arjuna. And so, knowing that that benediction was there, the generals broke the laws of military combat and ganged up on the son of Arjuna, Abhimanyu, and destroyed him. They wanted to get rid of him. So they ganged up on him. And as the Pandavas were trying to stop this terrible thing, Jayadrath had the power to stop them because he couldn't be killed. Lord Shiva's benediction. And when Arjuna heard that Abhimanyu had been mercilessly killed in this way, he took a vow. I will destroy Jayadrath. So if at hearing that vow, that was at the end of the day, the Kauravas had a big celebration. Great! We don't have to kill the invincible Arjuna. We just protect Jayadrath tomorrow and he'll kill himself. And if he kills himself, then the Pandavas will be discouraged and we're victorious. That's their battle plan. Protect Jayadrath. So, when Krishna heard that Jayadrath had taken such a vow, he said, why'd you take such a terrible vow? He said, because I knew you'd protect me and you'd uphold my word because you're Bhaktivatsala. And sure enough, it happened. Arjuna destroyed Jayadrath the next day. Or another example, again, with Arjuna, this is picturing Karna, and Karna's wheel towards the end of the battle His wheel was stuck in the mud because the battlefield was muddy with blood of so many warriors, and as he was trying to fix his wheel, Krishna's pointing to Karna, telling Arjuna, kill him. Krishna gives the reasons to Karna why he instructed to do like that. So, and for the devotee to follow instructions of Krishna like that, then it's appropriate. Not, you know, when used for Krishna. That was the standard, Prabhupada explained and given. So, the Lord is exhibiting anger. We're, text 3, we'll hear more about his anger. Now we'll go on to text 2. Now I've highlighted certain words in these texts because they're important. So this word sankita, sankita is in relation to fear. Everyone, including Sri, the goddess of fortune, Sakshad Sri. They were, including her, afraid of Lord Nrisimhadev. And this other in the red, drishtvatam mahad adbhutam, adbhutam, like adbhuta shringa. This wonder. So here's the translation. So just take the highlighting message. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, was requested to go before the Lord by all the demigods present, who, because of fear, could not do so. But even she had never seen such a wonderful and extraordinary form of the Lord, and thus she could not approach, feeling fear, she couldn't approach him. Now, how is it she's never seen this form before? She is always engaged in service to the Lord. Prabhupada's purport says, the Lord has unlimited forms and bodily features. These are all situated in Vaikuntha, yet Lakshmi, Devi, the goddess of fortune, being inspired by Leela Shakti, could not appreciate this unprecedented form of the Lord. Now, there was a question yesterday evening, Sneha Bali's question, why this time and why that time? And one of the explanations, not always, but there's a Leela in Akur about this word Adbhuta. It was a Leela so that the mood could be adbhuta. It's one of the 7 indirect rasas, wonder. So she was acting in the way that she did so they could all experience this secondary rasa that enhances the primary rasa. She's only acting according to the indication, however she gets her indications, from the Supreme Lord. It's a Leela of the Supreme Lord, and she's acting in that way, inspired by Leela Shakti. So in other words, Sneha, sometimes we just can't understand these things because it's a purpose of the Lord for His pleasure, and very, very deep and profound is to strengthen a particular feeling of love within this devotee or the group of devotees for his pleasure. It's not explicable by cause and effect kinds of things. Sometimes. Prabhupada in his purport, in other words, for the common men, the form of the Lord as Nrisimhadev is certainly unseen and wonderful. But for a devotee like Prahlad Maharaj, such a fearsome form of the Lord is not at all extraordinary. by the grace of the Lord, a devotee can very easily understand how the Lord can appear in any form he likes. Therefore, the devotee is never afraid of such a form because of special favor bestowed upon Prahlad Maharaj. He remains silent and unafraid. He's fearless. Even though all the demigods, including Lakshmi Devi, were afraid. So there we have it. She was afraid. But Leela Shakti. Now here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation. Going back to the first and then the second verse. In the ninth chapter, Prahlad, ordered by Brahma, approaches the Lord and offers prayers so that the devas can approach him. What to speak of others, even Lakshmi could not calm Nrisingha. Prahlad, however, understood that Nrisingha was the embodiment of affection. And that was expressed in the previous chapter. He is not afraid. For the devotee, as we heard Sridhar Swami say, for the non-devotee, one thing, and for the devotee, he's the abode of affection. Though she had seen Nrisingadev in a previous kalpa, and though Nrisingadev is always present in Vaikuntha, the impression of not having previously seen or heard about this form was produced by Leela Shakti in order to make everyone taste Adbhuta Rasa, the mood of astonishment. You follow? It's very nice. It's a rasa answer. She did what she did in order to invoke this secondary astonishment. I've never seen this form before. She had seen the form before. But she's... The verse is saying that. It's a mood to enhance love. Now, text 3 highlighted this word kupitam, which is again anger. It means extreme anger. Therefore, Lord Brahma requested Prahlad Maharaj, who was standing very near him, "My dear son, Lord Nrisingadev is extremely angry at your demoniac father. Please go forward and appease the Lord." And so he does. There's Lord Brahma gesturing, and the other demigods. There's Narada, so forth. But superlative beyond all of them by Leela arrangement is Prahlad. After all, Lord Nrisingadev appeared to protect him, and so you're the right one to go appease him. Text 4. I highlighted the word Anjali, which means that he came before the Lord, bowed with folded hands. He's just following the order of his superiors, the demigods. Narada continued. Whoops. O King, he's speaking to Yudhisthira, although the exalted devotee Prahlad Maharaj was only a little boy, he accepted Lord Brahma's words. He gradually proceeded toward Lord Nrisingadev and fell down to offer his respectful obeisances with folded hands. So how do you bow down with folded hands? But here's a nice image. It's his mood. He's obedient to his superiors. His mood is one of humility. He's coming before the object of his love and devotion with total humility and submission. Text 5. I particularly highlighted these two words, kritabhayam. We'll hear about kritabhayam. It's the power of the hand of Lord Nrisingadev to bring abhayam, fearlessness. He's already fearless. Now he's like absolutely fearless. And then Pariputta, Kripaya Pariputta, is something about Lord Nrisingadeva. He's experiencing ecstasy. No, he's ecstatic in any case. But he's experiencing a particular ecstasy that's all being arranged for his ecstasy, for his happiness, because he's the supreme enjoyer. And he's enjoying Prahlad coming. He's enjoying the whole Leela. Because remember, it was all arranged long ago by, oh, here's how it was arranged. Jai and Vijay, gatekeepers of Lord Narayana, but that was their service, that was their function. And because they intimately associated with their master, they knew him in ways that others don't know him. And he has this chivalrous side. He likes a tussle. It's a secondary rasa, but it's in him. Chivalry. And who's qualified to offer him a tussle? But if he so desires, we can do that service. It was just desire. But Lord Narayan knows their heart as they know his heart, and he fulfilled their desire. He gave them the opportunity to be in a tussle. So now, having dismissed Hiranyakashipu, the Lord is in ecstasy to be with his devotee Prahlad. That's what this verse is saying. When Lord Nrisingadeva saw the small boy, Prahlad Maharaj, prostrated at the soles of his lotus feet, he became most ecstatic in affection toward his devotee, that this Pariputta, Kripaya Pariputta, became most ecstatic in affection toward his devotee. And then, raising Prahlad, the Lord placed his lotus hand upon the boy's head, because his hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all of his devotees. So that's all you need, right? But he was fearless before that, because he had full shelter. But now it's like very special Leela gesture. So Prabhupada writes, and this is again this no material qualification needed message. So to become devotee or favorite of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's very easy. It's not at all difficult. Here we see the example, Prahlad Maharaj, 5-year-old. Being a devotee, he only knows the Supreme Lord and he offered obeisances. That is his qualification. Anyone can do that. Anyone can come here in the temple and offer obeisances. What's the difficulty? Similarly, one must have the sense that here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna or Nrisingadeva or any one of his multi-expansions. So it's the gesture and the submission. Then Prabhupada, in his purport, goes on, speaking now about fear and fearlessness. The necessities of the material world are four. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, right? So, ahara, nidra, bhaya, and maituna. He's speaking about this fearlessness that's created, abhaya. In the material world, everyone is in fearful consciousness. Sada, the references from a few chapters earlier, 755. 755 is a verse spoken by Prahlad to his father, and he's saying to his father, in this material world, everyone has this difficulty. Here we go. Translation. O best of the Asuras, king of the demons, as far as I have learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and a temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen in a dark well where there is no water but only suffering. One should give up this position and go to the forest. Go to Vrindavan, Prabhupada puts in there, where only Krishna consciousness is prevalent. And one should thus take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's where this 755 reference comes from, where it is said before, and now it's being said again in a different context. It's mature world is a place of fear. Everyone that has that bodily conception of life is fearful. Then Prabhupada explains, the only means to become fearless, I know some people that are in a difficult situation at present and they're feeling fear. Here's Prabhupada's teaching. The only means to make everyone fearless, they may not get the hand of Lord Nrsimhadeva on their head, but Krishna consciousness, the devotee's hope of becoming fearless is to chant the holy name of Lord Nrsimhadeva. Yato, yato, yamin, tato, Nrsimha. Wherever we go, we must always think of Lord Nrsimhadeva. And I'm going to tell two little stories. One, they're both New York City stories. So, one time we were attending a concert, distributing books and chanting and stuff in Central Park. And the devotees then, when it was over and we're going back, a large group of us by subway to the temple. And one devotee, nice devotee, a little spaced out, he got on the wrong subway platform. He was going on the uptown side instead of the downtown side. And so when the train came through, he's on the other side. Somebody, he's alone. He's got this satchel bag around his neck that has money in it. So a mugger came up to grab his money. So what did he do? At the top of his lungs, he screamed, Nrsimhadeva, 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 Nrsimhadeva. We couldn't hear anything because the train was in the way and rumbling, and the guy left him alone. He was somehow moved away by his calling out Nrsimhadeva's name so intensely. Now, New York isn't such a terribly dangerous place. I think other cities are also dangerous. I can think of some other cities that are dangerous, but another situation was, again, we're going to attend a concert, and one Mataji was kind of straggling behind, and this was in Central Park, and a rapist grabbed her and was dragging her to where he was going to do his dirty business. And what did she do? She screamed Nrsimhadeva's name over and over and over and over and over. And then he said, well, if that's the way you're going to be, forget it. And walked away. I wouldn't recommend walking alone in Central Park, a lady. But anyway, these are anecdotal. Fearlessness is created by the protection of Lord Nrsimhadeva. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the meaning of this word, krita abhayam, krita abhayam, the hand which creates fearlessness. Now, he can create fearlessness without his hand. Call his name. And his hand and his name are not different. Call his name. And fearlessness is at your disposal. And now, text 6. What happened after the hand of Nrsimhadeva was placed on Prahlad's head? We heard yesterday evening Prabhupada's little summary, that he was filled with Brahma again. Remember that from yesterday? So now here's Duta Kila Shubha and Paratma Darshana. These two terms are especially important. This word means he became completely freed from all material contaminations, not like he was a dirty person and now he's clean, but completely, you know, absolutely. And Paratma Darshana, he became fixed in transcendence. And this other part down here, his heart, Hrid, his heart became filled with love, and Ashru Lochana, his eyes filled with tears. He hasn't prayed yet, but he's about to pray. But this is what's happening in this ecstatic exchange with Lord Nrisingadeva. Translation. By the touch of Lord Nrisingadeva's hand on Prahlad Maharaj's head, Prahlad was completely free from all material contaminations and desires. What would that experience be like? As if he had been thoroughly cleansed. Therefore, he at once became transcendentally situated, Paratma Darshana, and all the symptoms of ecstasy became manifest in his body, his heart filled with love, and his eyes with tears. And thus he was able to completely capture the lotus feet of the Lord within the core of his heart. Beautiful verse. And then the final. But this is his status by mercy of Lord Nrisingadeva. Then comes this phrase, ekagra manasa susamahita. His ekagra manasa, his mind, he's in a state of trance. He's beyond, like, just being a nice devotee. He's in this state of trance. The verse is saying. And the bottom part is both his eyes, as we see in this nice painting, his eyes and his mind. Hrid and his aksha, his eyes, were fixed upon the Supreme Lord in a trance-like condition. Prahlad Maharaj fixed his mind and sight upon Lord Nrisingadeva with full attention in complete trance. With a fixed mind, he began to offer prayers in love with a faltering voice. So after breakfast comes his prayers, but now this is his mood. We have been, as a reminder, he's teaching us the mood of devotional service. He's got mercy, but he got the mercy because he was eager for mercy. And he got mercy from Narada, which qualified him to have that eagerness for mercy, and it's being reciprocated with. So now let's hear a little bit what these terms mean. Susamahita. Susamahita means fully fixed or highly attentive. Su samahita, like samadhi, same root. Su samahita, fully fixed. Prabhupada writes, the ability to fix the mind in this way is a result of yoga siddhi, mystic perfection. He's a devotee, but he's got the powers of mystic perfection. As is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.1, something that Prabhupada would quote regularly, it's right in the purport. dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashyantiyam yoginaha. Those of you that are read Prabhupada's books and hear his recordings, we hear this regularly. So the context, this is the last chapter of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Sutta Goswami is making a summary of what he has heard from Shukadev. And this is the first verse of the chapter that's saying, this is what yogis experience, specifically, what yogis experience as they capture the Lord within their heart. Because that's what was said in this verse. He's a yogi. He's a bhakti yogi. But through his bhakti, he doesn't go to yoga class. He doesn't go off in the Himalayas. He's a yogi, a bhakti yogi, that has this same perfection as we found Parikshit Maharaj achieved. His mind was fixed just from hearing Shukadev. Prahlad's mind is fixed in devotion. Dhyana vastita tad gatena manasa pashyanti. Manasa pashyanti. He's seeing the Supreme Lord within his heart. He's seeing the Supreme Lord right in front of him. Prabhupada writes, one attains yogic perfection when he is freed from all material diversions and his mind is fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord. This is called samadhi or trance. So he is in samadhi or trance not by going off somewhere and, not being disturbed, going to the forest and not having any troubles around him. He's been mega troubled by his father, completely undisturbed. So what we're hearing, and I'll expand on it, is that this stage of Prahlad is a stage of samadhi, and samadhi is beyond the stage of neutrality. The stage of neutrality, freed from all material diversions, it's beyond that. What's beyond that? It's this stage of samadhi. So I want to read something from Bhagavad Gita. Because the process of yoga, Dhyan Yoga, is chapter 6, right? And there's chapter 6, verses 20 through 23, where Krishna is describing the stage of samadhi for the yogi. And the verse just before it, it's the mind that doesn't move. The mind that doesn't move is like a lamp in a windless place that does in meditation on the transcendent self. This is capital S, the personality of Godhead. That's the yogi. Now, Prahlad's a yogi. He doesn't have to go to a mountain or a cave or some secluded place. He's in the midst of chaos and he's in samadhi. So here's Krishna's words explaining that stage of samadhi. In the stage of perfection called trance, or is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. I'll go back. Oops. This statement at the bottom from the purport of this verse 7. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind in the self, capital S, in that joyous state. One is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses, established thus one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there's no greater gain. being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So, miseries arise from material contact. We learned that in chapter 2. Ehi samsparsha boga dukkha yonai ebate. So in the mind, there is desire, and desire is the root of suffering. So, what does Buddha teach? Buddha teaches the root of suffering is desire. Solution? Become desireless. And when you're on the other side of desire, what's that? It's nirvana. Listen to Prabhupada's purport. I invite you, read it carefully, like multiple times. Because it's a very important... It's what's going on here in this verse with Prahlad, but it's teachings that's in Bhagavad Gita, and it's how we should, what's our goal? Okay. Third paragraph of this beautiful verse in purport. After nirvana, or material cessation, there is the manifestation of spiritual activities beyond nirvana, beyond nothingness. We'll go back. The state of nirvana corresponds with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. It's in the purport, second paragraph. Chaita Darpana Marjanam is the cleansing. This is from chanting. And then following that comes nirvana, or cessation of material suffering by cessation of material desire, or cessation of ignorance, which causes ignorant desire and then causes suffering. This, quote, clearance is actually liberation, or Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. The theory of nirvana, also preliminary, corresponds with this principle, the Bhava Mahadavagni principle, cessation. In the Bhagavatam 2.10.6, this is called Swaropena Vyavastati. So what's 2.10.6? 2.10.6 is an explanation of their 10 topics in the Bhagavatam. Canto 2, chapter 10, verses 1 and 2, give the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. One of the 10 is liberation. Verse 6 is explaining what is that liberation. Svarupena, Svarupa, Vyavasati, being situated in one's spiritual form, Svarup. Svarupena, Vyavasati. Liberation spoken of in the Bhagavatam is not nirvana. It's not material cessation. It's beyond material cessation. What's on the other side of nothingness? Spiritual life. That's our Bhagavatam teaching, it's Bhagavad Gita teaching. After nirvana, or material cessation, there is the manifestation of spiritual activities, or devotional service to the Lord, known as Krishna consciousness. In the words of the Bhagavatam, Swaropena Vyavastati, this is the, quote, real life of the living entity. Dear devotees, Buddha doesn't talk about a living entity. Some of the more modern Buddhists say there isn't one. Why isn't there one? Because there's nothing. How can you have something when there's nothing? Beyond the stage of being in the moment, is what's on the other side of the moment? There's nothing. There's no self. There's no consciousness. They say it explicitly. They write it and say it. There's no consciousness. There's no soul. What to speak of God? Supreme soul. So what's on the other side of that? Nirvana. It's Swarupena Vyavasati. That's what the Bhagavatam is teaching. And that's what Prahlad Maharaj is showing. That's what Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. Maya, or illusion, is the condition of spiritual life contaminated by material infection. Liberation from this material infection does not mean destruction of the original eternal position of the living entity. No, if you don't accept the Vedas, like Buddha rejected the Vedas, then you don't know this stuff, what's on the other side of illusion. You just eliminate illusion. What do you have left? Nothing. Definition by negation. So impersonalism and Buddhism are practically the same. They just use different nomenclature. It's practically the same. Shankaracharya's teaching is Buddhism. It's not Brahman realization. It's Buddhism. Nothingness. They say Brahman, but what's that Brahman? It's nothingness. Anyway. And Prabhupada is going through this, making reference to Patanjali, who was an impersonalist. At least is rendered as an impersonalist, but verses where he's saying what samadhi is, and it's, here's his language. It's in the purport three times. Kaivalyam, that's a favorite word of Shankara. Absolute monism, Kaivalya. In fact, this is Kaivalya. What is it? Kevala Advaita. That's his doctrine. Absolute monism. So Kaivalya, according to Patanjali, is... Swarupa Pratishta Va Chitti Shakti Iti. Wow, I'm an impersonalist and you can't have Chit Shakti, because then there's two things. There's Brahman and there's Chit Shakti. So he's just like, no Chit Shakti allowed here in our paradigm. But Patanjali is speaking of Chit Shakti. It helps one to see one's own spiritual form. So when you see your spiritual form, you're simultaneously seeing the Lord's form. You see the Lord's form, you're seeing your form. That's what Prahlad is experiencing. That's what chapter 6 Bhagavad Gita is teaching. And somehow the impersonalists go and meddle around and Chit Shakti disappears and the living entity disappears and God disappears, and that's Bhagavad Gita? Whoa. They're cheaters. And people like to be cheated. Yes, I'm God. Just what I wanted. I came to this material world to become God, and now I got the path to become God. I just forgot it, that's all. And I just, like, get rid of the forgetfulness, and now I'm God again. It's really cheating. So our teaching is this. Samadhi is beyond nirvana. And what is it? It's real liberation, as taught in Canto 2, Chapter 10, Verse 6. That's where this phrase comes from. Svarupena Yavastati. So here's how this ends. Prabhupada writes in the purport, Prahlad Maharaj attained that stage beyond the senses. Because he was engaged in service, he felt transcendentally situated, and naturally his mind and attention became saturated in transcendence. In that condition, he began to offer his prayers as follows. That's just a warm-up. We haven't started his prayers yet. Okay, so what I think I would want to do is, I'm sure there'll be lots of discussion, but so we can keep our schedule, let's do this. Let's break for breakfast. Write your questions down, discuss it during breakfast, come back, and at the end of the first set of prayers, we'll take time for questions, trying to keep our schedule. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Prahlad Maharaj ki, Gaur Premanandi. Now, Yuglapriti, did you remember your cookies? Yuglapriti? Yuglapriti? Cookies?